I'm Kate, and I love documenting those moments in life that we wish we could tell tales about. It's in my writing, it's in my photography, and it's here in the podcast, Conversations from Our Days. Conversations from Our Days makes visible those moments in everyday life that define and shape us.
It's okay to be figuring stuff out. It's okay to be a bit awkward. It's okay to not know what you're doing. It's okay to experiment.
The title or kind of badge of Wonder Mum or Superwoman, whatever, makes it kind of gives it a kind of different status. Like a Wonder Mum doesn't struggle. She just gets all the shit done. But the reality is that it is a struggle. It kind of dehumanizes it, I guess.
Every fortnight, I'm in conversation with guests who will share the big moments and the little ones that shape our identity.
I want to show the world who we are as a community. I want to expose our truth, our beauty, our unity, our family values, everything that makes us a powerful force to be reckoned with, essentially.
If you and I sat down for an hour and shared a coffee and conversation together, this is what it might sound like. It's about everyone being heard. Find Conversations from Our Days on your favourite podcast catcher and settle in for an hour of personal stories that might just become an essential moment for your days.
She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Hello and welcome to The Persistence. This is She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast. My name is Beatrice and I'm here with...
Elizabeth!
And there's actually a bit of housekeeping that we have to do today. The trailer that you heard before the episode started is from the wonderful podcast Conversations from Our Days by Kate O'Sullivan, which is going to relaunch very soon. And due to the fact that I'm also a very avid podcast listener and I love getting suggestions from podcasts and hosts that I trust, we thought it's a good idea to introduce you time and time again to podcasts that we think you will also enjoy. Now, Conversations from Our Days is, as I said, hosted by Kate O'Sullivan. And it's going to be, as she puts it, a fortnightly exploration of identity. And it's about documenting every person's narrative in a way that makes us all feel seen and heard. So, yeah, it sounds really good. I'm looking forward to it. As I said, it's going to relaunch very soon. And you can, as you heard in the trailer, subscribe to it now so you don't miss it. Then there's very great news because She Who Persisted is now also available on Amazon Alexa.
Woohoo!
It was a long fight because they kept rejecting my submission because of how did they put it, like obscene content or like what was it?
Yeah, and not just because we say fuck, but because nasty is in the title of our podcast.
Because yeah, so I had to rename the podcast from She Who Persisted, the Nasty Podcast, to just She Who Persisted, so that I could even submit it to Amazon Alexa. So yay, or not yay. One thing that I wanted to say before we talk about our actual content today is that apart from the Facebook page, there is also a Facebook group, which is called Per Sisters, the She Who Persisted group. And this is actually the best way to get in contact with us,
yes,
apart from writing us an email, because a lot of people write us messages on Facebook via the Facebook page. And a lot of times that doesn't really work. I don't know. There are a lot of mishaps happening with the Facebook page messaging function, because sometimes we get the notification that we got a message and then neither of us can actually open it.
Yes.
So the best thing you can do if you want to contact us is either in that group, and that's also a good way to get in touch with other listeners and like have conversations about the topics that we talk about in our episodes, or you write us an email, shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. I think those are the best two ways.
Yeah.
And then don't forget that we also have a Patreon if you want to support the podcast in that way, which is patreon.com/shewhopersisted. And then there's one more thing that I wanted to say before we start. And that's kind of a corrections corner thing, or rather an incomplete information completed by a listener corner. So my friend Ellie is writing her PhD thesis on body positivity and body shame and the cultural construction of female bodies as disgusting, and how the self-confident display and reclaiming of these quote-unquote disgusting bodies can be an act of empowerment and feminist resistance. And she commented on her Insta post for our episode, and she said that the picture that I posted by Rupi Kaur, or that I talked about in the last episode, and that I also reposted on Instagram, that that's actually part of an art project that Rupi Kaur did. And you can find it under rupikaur.com/period. And she did it in her last year of uni for a visual rhetoric course. And it was part of a photo series called Period. And it's not real blood also. And on Rupi Kaur's homepage, she says, quote, "I bleed each month to help make humankind a possibility. My womb is home to the divine, a source of life for our species, whether I choose to create or not. But very few times it's seen that way. In older civilizations, this blood was considered holy. In some it still is. But a majority of people, societies, and communities shun this natural process. Some are more comfortable with the pornification of women, the sexualization of women, the violence and degradation of women than this. They cannot be bothered to express their disgust about all that, but will be angered and bothered by this. We menstruate and see it as dirty, attention-seeking, sick, a burden, as if this process is less natural than breathing. As if it's not a bridge between this universe and the last. As if this process is not love, labor, life, selfless and strikingly beautiful." Yeah. So that's so the info that I gave you was actually incomplete. It was not just one image on Instagram, but it's part of an art project. And I thought I should tell you that.
And there are, as we talked about in that episode, there are a number of other artists who are working in the medium of actual period blood and using a woman's body to actually produce art and the fluids that come from women's bodies to actually produce art. Yeah. And this is just one example of something that's representative of what comes out of a woman's body as, you know, an art project that is reclaiming women's bodies.
Yeah, and you can find info on other projects in our show notes from the last episode on our homepage, upsister.com. You can listen to the episode where we'll also talk about period art, the last episode, or you can look at Instagram where I also posted a few pictures by artists that work with period blood. So, this is the second episode of our series on menstruation.
Woohoo!
And actually, this week, very recently, the Scottish government announced that it will make menstrual hygiene products available for free in schools, colleges, and universities. And I would like to quote from a Guardian article on the subject. Quote, "The Scottish government is the first in the world to make sanitary products available free to all of its 395,000 pupils and students to help banish the scourge of period poverty when girls and women struggle to pay for basic sanitary products on a monthly basis, significantly affecting the hygiene, well-being and health." So a recent survey of more than 2,000 people by Young Scot found that 1 in 4 respondents at school, college, university in Scotland struggle to access sanitary products. And there's research by the grassroots group Women for Independence that revealed that nearly 1 in 5 women had experienced period poverty. And that study was done by the WHO and the UNICEF. And struggle means things like having to improvise with items such as toilet paper and old clothes or some type of cloth due to the high cost of menstrual hygiene products. And Scotland obviously is not the only country in the world in which period poverty is an issue, but it's the first to make this move to fight it effectively. So that is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about period poverty.
Well, period poverty as well as the tampon tax.
The tampon tax, which goes hand in hand with it. So it's intertwined, yeah.
Exactly. But to kind of have a conversation about that, we have to talk about the types of products there are out there, the cost of those products, and the barriers to being able to afford those products, and why this is particularly a kind of way that women are affected. You know, we can say like everybody should have access to toothpaste. We're not gonna say, okay, toothpaste shouldn't be taxed, but maybe toothpaste shouldn't be taxed too. But taxing hygiene products, menstrual hygiene products, is a direct tax on women in a way that it is never going to be a tax on, or people who have periods, in a way that is never a tax on people who do not have periods. So you're taxing a portion of the population, and that tax will never affect another portion of the population. But first, let's start out by talking about what we use and why. So, Beatrice.
Do you want me to start? Do you want to?
Yeah, you start.
Okay, so I use pads. I've always used pads. I don't like tampons because I don't like the feeling of when I'm on my period of putting things into my body.
Mm-hmm.
Because like my whole, I feel like my all of my reproductive organs just feel horrible and sore. I talked about this last time that I have very bad cramps and very bad period pain. And then I also a lot of times have the feeling that my vagina itself hurts. I don't know if you know that from your period or if our listeners are familiar with that, but I feel like everything hurts and I don't want to put anything into myself during that time. And also one thing that I like about pads is that I feel like when I use pads, I feel the blood flow and I kind of... feel how heavy it is, so it makes it kind of easier to control. I feel more in control, let's put it that way. So I've never liked tampons. I always feel like my cramps get worse when I use them, so I don't like them a lot. And I also don't like menstrual cups. And that's something that is very popular amongst like my circles. A lot of women, a lot of people who menstruate that I know, that I'm friends with, love menstrual cups. And there's this is a bit of a tangent, but there's like one thing that I have a problem with, and that's the idea of good and bad when it comes to menstruating and kind of normative ideas about how to menstruate best.
I totally agree with this.
Yeah, and I feel like it has become a huge thing recently with like this ecological yoga hipster movement thing where everyone seems to be using menstrual cups. And don't get me wrong, if you like menstrual cups, great, go for it, live the menstrual cup life. I personally hate them just as much as I hate tampons for the fact that I don't want to put anything into my vagina when I'm bleeding out of it. I hate that. I think it's uncomfortable and I want to use pads. So every single fucking time when someone posts in one of the feminist groups I'm in on Facebook, when someone posts anything about menstruation or even when the topic of menstruation comes up in personal conversation, there will be 10 people annoying the shit out of you by telling you all the problems of your life, especially those that relate to menstruation, will be solved by menstrual cups. And, you know, listen. Menstruation sucks for so many women. For me personally, it's a time in which I'm in horrible pain, both physically and psychologically. I usually cannot function at all on the first day. Again, I talked about that in the last episode. So I need to do whatever I can do to feel as comfortable or as least horrible as I can. And menstrual cups are not on that list. They're on the opposite list. So stop shoving them in my face whenever I talk about my menstruation or in my vagina. Whatever. So I hate that in addition to everything that women need to perfect about themselves, from the teeth to the hair to the weight to the sex life to the negotiation skills, we now also apparently have to perfect the way we menstruate. And I feel like sometimes pads and tampons are kind of deemed bad because you don't care about the environment more than you care about yourself. And when you use cups, you're kind of a good menstruator, and that's completely bullshit. So if you like menstrual cups, do it, but it's not like a more pure, a good or more evolved way of menstruating.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get that out there because I'm really annoyed by that whole like discourse.
I get the idea behind using a menstrual cup and that it is better for the environment. It's the same way that giving children having children wear cloth diapers can be better for the environment. I mean, there are other pads. There are reusable pads that you can, that are washable. Yes.
Organic pads.
Yeah. Glad rags and Luna pads are two examples. There are now like period underwear like Thinx, and I'm sure there's another one that I'm forgetting. That,
which is very, very expensive, unfortunately. Thanks, if you're listening to this, sponsor us.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but again, like these are products that are expensive. I mean, I get that a cup is, you know, you buy it once or more than once because, you know, plastic does break down, rubber or silicone or whatever does break down over time, or you want, you know, to be able to have different ones or whatever. I've never used them, but I had a friend who used them that it actually irritated her cervix.
Yeah.
So that was a problem for her.
I don't want to put anything into my vagina. And there are also sustainable ways of using pads. You can use your reusable pads. You can use organic pads. I know that it's a problem that menstrual hygiene products fill landfills. Mm-hmm. But so do so many other convenience products, you know? I mean, it's just, I think it's good that we talk about this thing, but I don't want to, especially when it comes to my period, I don't want to have to be a good girl in that area of my life too, when it's already something that's just a pain in the ass. Or in the vagina, to be more exact.
Sure. I mean, you shouldn't be like shamed because you use pads. I mean, I think I mentioned in the last episode, when I first started my period, my mother bought me like pads in various sizes and like strengths, you know, whatever. But because I did ballet until college, and because I've always been very active, pads were not actually have never really been my preferred method of menstrual hygiene products. Even when I had really bad cramps, I've always used tampons. Mm-hmm. In the United States, it's much more common to have tampons that have an applicator.
Yeah, we don't really have that here.
Yeah, so they're pretty easy to insert, although the every box of tampons in the United States, especially the ones with applicators, come with like an instruction manual on how to put them in. And like, you know, having, you know, I've had my period since I was 12. I'm like 42 now, so 30 years I've had a period. Like, it's pretty obvious how you insert an applicator. But the visuals that they have in there are like, you know, put your leg up on the on the toilet and like do this, and you're like, how is this supposed to work? Like, I don't understand, because it's not like you really often have conversations about how to insert a tampon. At least not in my family. My family is like Catholic and Irish and German, and we don't have those conversations. So I use tampons. I am a runner, a very slow runner, not an elite runner of any sort, but I run. I think that it would be much more uncomfortable for me to wear a pad. I'm sure that cups are very comfortable for doing various activities, but for me, it just isn't something that I'm interested in. But I try to use, cotton tampons, it's things that don't have a lot of like plastic and other types of stuff in them. Cotton breaks down.
Which is also better for your body.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But the problem is, you know, to use an organic cotton tampon is significantly more expensive.
I know.
Using
it's the same with pads.
Yeah. 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 So I use tampons. I'm totally fine with it. I would love to try out like the period underwear, but they are super expensive.
I know. This is why I said thanks. Yeah. Sponsor us.
Yeah, right.
Send us samples for a review.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall how much they are. There are a couple of various companies, because it's not just Thinx. There's another brand that came out with them as well.
Yeah. The cool thing about Thinx is that they also have period underwear for men, which is cool. Or for people who, like, non-feminine period underwear. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the price comparison between the US and Austria. And I'm sure that this is similar. The Austrian numbers are similar to how it is in other European countries. I have no idea what it is outside of Europe.
So I had a look at DM, which is like our main, what we call Drogeriemarkt.
Like drugstore.
Like what's the English word?
Drugstore.
Yeah, which is like a famous drugstore in Austria and Germany. Yeah. So at DM, a pack of 16 quote-unquote normal-sized always pads. Usually it's about 250 to 3 euros. The bigger ones, like the night ones, when you have a heavier flow, are more expensive than that. You only get a pack of 9 for the price of 250 to 3 euros.
Well, because you're only using them at night. So, like, theoretically, you're only using, like, a couple a month.
Not if you're me and have a very heavy flow, then you're using them all the time. Because I can't really use normal-sized ones. I always use the night ones. And also, on top of that, I cannot really use regular pads from the drugstore. I need to buy like really organic ones and ones that are not scented because I'm allergic to that. Mm-hmm. My vulva is not happy with like always pads. I need like organic ones, which are even more expensive.
Well, the scents and all of that stuff is very irritating. I mean, that like if you have sensitive skin, it can be very irritating.
It irritates the skin and it's like very sensitive skin down there. So I don't want perfume on my vagina.
Yeah.
Sorry, but no. So a pack of normal 48 OB tampons. OB is like also the main brand of tampons that you get here. So a pack of 48 normal tampons, normal again means like normal sized, what they think is normal sized, is about 5 euros. But those are the ones without the applicators. I don't know if I've ever seen applicators here, but I didn't use tampons, so I never look for it. But I think applicators are not very common in Austria. But the bigger ones, again, just with the pads, are more expensive. So,
yeah. So the first time I went to Europe, I was probably, mm-hmm. First time as a period having a person that I went to Europe, I was, I want to say 14 or 15. And mm-hmm, I don't know if I certainly probably didn't have enough tampons with me. And so I had to get tampons and the non-applicator ones are the only ones they had. And I had never used them before. And I was like, I don't even know how this really? Fucking works. Like, how does this even work? Now really? That's all I use, unless...
Without applicators.
Yeah, because it's cheaper, yeah. Mostly because I'm mm-hmm. super cheap. But mm-hmm. but also, if I'm going to get something that is organic, like, what's the point of getting something that I'm getting it because it's better for my body and because it hopefully... fingers crossed, like breaks down in a landfill more easily because it's cotton, yeah. Then have an applicator. And most applicators, so when I started having my period, most applicators, they had two different types. They had plastic ones and cardboard ones. And obviously the cardboard ones are made out of paper, so they break down in landfills more easily, but the plastic ones are more comfortable, of course. So a lot of tampons have just moved over to the plastic applicators and they no longer even have the cardboard applicators. Yeah. So it's just even more garbage to go into a landfill. Yeah. Which is, you know, great, sarcastically.
Not great.
Yeah, not great. So in terms of cost.
Sarcasm again. People yes. don't get it.
Sarcasm, sarcasm. So we have regular ultra thin always pads, a pack of 18 for $3.99, but they're on sale right now and they're usually $5.19. You can always find a sale, but the thing is a lot of women like the brand of pads that they like. So if they're on sale, great. If not, they're still going to buy them, often. If you want to get the larger nighttime ones, they have them in a 20 pack, not an 18 pack, for $5.49, which actually isn't bad, though I'm not sure how the smallest size you get for the mm-hmm. nighttime ones is 20, but the smallest size for the other ones you get is 18, and why there aren't multi-packs of pads. Like, so for tampons, yeah. we have multi-packs because your period, the flow is different over the course of the actual menstrual period, like when you are actually menstruating. So like the first couple days or three, it could be very heavy. And so you need super or super plus, or there's something beyond super plus. And I have friends who have like fibroids and issues with their periods that they need like super ultra mega plus. And they don't usually sell them in the grocery, in the store. You usually have to buy them online because, there's not as much of a need for them. And so they don't stock them. But we have multi-packs, so super, regular, and then light. I think the light ones are bullshit, and they're unnecessary for most women, but at least for me. But there are some people, I'm sure that takes care of your super light days. Tampons. The cheapest with an applicator that I saw at Target.com. So Target is like the European equivalent of like Kaufland.
Okay. We don't have that in Austria.
Or like a mega store. So they have everything, including like a drug area.
Mm-hmm.
The cheapest that I saw was $4 for 40 tampons. And this is for generic tampons. Often they also have sport or compact tampons that you can hide in your hand more easily when you're going to the bathroom because God forbid anybody know mm-hmm. that you have your period while you're sporty or out on a date or whatever. We have organic tampons that are without an applicator and they go for mm-hmm. $6 for a pack of 16.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's super, super expensive. And this is like a generic organic tampons, like organic cotton tampons. And OB tampons, which are probably the most common brand name of non-applicator tampons in the U.S., go for $6 for 40, which when you compare $6 for 16 for organic and $6 for 40, like I would go with like per tampon, I would go with OB anytime.
Yeah.
They're usually just regular cotton tampons. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, plastic or anything in them. The string is just a regular string that, you know, comes out of them. It's nothing fancy.
Yeah. That's what you mostly get in Austria.
Exactly.
OB. Yeah.
So, but that same pack of 40 tampons or similar ones in Austria cost me about 1 to 2 mm-hmm. euro over the summer, which is about a third of the cost.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. I mean, I thought that that was really interesting. So I'm still going through my supply of Austrian tampons from when I was there over the summer. So luckily I haven't had to buy any more since I've been back.
I wonder why it's more expensive in the U.S.
Well, I don't think I didn't buy OB ones. I bought one of the generic brands, mm-hmm. so that I think that helped. What I thought was really interesting in Austria, so I went to the DM drugstore, and they had like a display mm-hmm. by all of the tampons to show you what the tampons actually looked like, how big they were, and how long they were, how wide they were, all of that stuff. That is something that you do not see in America.
Really?
Oh God. Look, we're hiding that shit so far. Like we have so much shame when it comes to tampons and stuff. Nobody wants to see that. They don't have that on display anywhere. You can look at the back to see like approximately how big things are sometimes, but we don't want to actually look at what tampons are, especially mm-hmm. in like mixed company. So yeah, mm-hmm. no, we got so much shame surrounding our periods in America. There's no way you would even have like a sample tampon behind a plastic or like plexiglass thing so that you can actually see what it is you're buying. Fuck no, that doesn't happen in America.
I mean, I haven't seen that often here either, to be fair.
I saw it in the DM on Alsterstrasse when I was there.
Yeah.
And
the bigger ones
shocked.
Maybe have it, yeah.
And I thought it was great. I mean, I would love to be able to see like how big the tampon actually is because then you can actually do a comparison, right?
Mm.
But anyway. Yeah. So that's my like very unscientific comparison between the cost of tampons in the United States versus like Austria and other European countries.
And I wonder why it's more expensive in the US. I don't get it.
Great question. I have no idea. I mean, the organic tampons thing, you know, there are a couple of companies that you can buy organic tampons that are less expensive than that. But if, you know, you're buying them at the store instead of through whatever other, you know, company that you use online, then they're just going to be more expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So the organic pads that I buy from the M are also much more expensive than all the other pads that they have. But it's the only thing that doesn't irritate my skin. So yay.
Yeah, sure.
A year ago, I wrote an article, or rather a commentary, for the Austrian queer feminist blog Sugarbox. I'll also link that in the show notes because it's a very interesting blog. If you speak German, then have a look at it. And while I did research for that, I found that women, or rather people who menstruate, spend about 16,000 euros on their menstruations over their lifetime. And that includes hygiene products and painkillers and all the rest of it. So how much is that in dollars? 16,000 euros in, it's probably about the same.
I think it's more in the United States.
Really? Wait,
I assume you're gonna Google that shit.
I'm googling it right now. Wait. euros in, so it is 18,625 and something United States dollars.
Okay.
Is what Google says. So it's a lot of money. And women spend that on, as I said, not just hygiene products, but also painkillers and, you know, the whole mm-hmm. period shebang. And another interesting number is that the average woman menstruates between 450 to 470 times over her lifespan, which is also, I thought, an interesting number to just have in the back of your mind when we talk about all of this.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if you think about how many pads and how many tampons you use over those 450 to 470 times...
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So, in episode 16 and 17, we talked about the state of women's rights in the US and in Austria. And in those episodes, we also talked about the gender pay gap in those respective countries and the gender wealth gap. And if you've listened to the episodes, and if you haven't, then do so now, you know that women have significantly less money at their disposal than men. And on top of that, they have to spend a lot of money on a biological process that they, well, can control, but that they just... that just happens to them.
A natural, normal, biological yeah. process.
And if that sounds unfair to you, then it's probably because it is.
Yes.
And we will talk about the taxation of menstrual hygiene products in this episode, but I'm just going to put it out there. Not taxing menstrual hygiene products is one step in the right direction, but I'm in the they should be free camp, especially at schools. So let's talk about period poverty. Before Scotland, and we talked about this in the beginning of the episode, made the move to provide pupils and students with free sanitary products in schools and universities and colleges, in 2017 there was a nationwide debate going on in all of the UK about schoolgirls not going to school because they could not afford sanitary products. Amika George is an 18-year-old student in London, and she started the hashtag FreePeriod campaign. And it's also on freeperiod.com, and I suggest you have a look at it. It's a very interesting webpage also. And it was also like an online hashtag thing, FreePeriod. And part of this campaign was a petition on change.org where she urged Theresa May, the current Prime Minister of the UK, to essentially make menstrual hygiene products available in schools for all children, available for free for all children who are also on free school meal plans. So children who live in poverty, basically. And the change.org petition states, quote, "Millions of children around the world are denied an education. In the UK, every child has the right to go to school, but a growing number of them face missing school every month for the simple reason that they can't afford menstrual products. As a schoolgirl myself, we must change this. Period poverty must go. That's why we are calling on the government to provide free menstrual products to all children and free school meals." Back in March 2017, the UK charity Freedom for Girls, which provides menstrual products to women and girls in Kenya, was approached for donations by a school in Leeds, which had become increasingly concerned about the number of girls recurrently absent from school. Children as young as 11 suffer the same of using socks or taping issue to underwear. It is not only unacceptable, but can seriously jeopardize their health. Tina Leslie, founder of Freedom for Girls, stated that nobody thinks it's happening here, but it's happening here. Period poverty has always existed, and up until recently, nothing has been done to tackle the issue head on. Period taboo meant these children don't feel comfortable to speak freely and openly about their struggles. It means we may never know the full extent of this problem. We need to escort period shame out of the door and mobilize the government so that children from the lowest income backgrounds are not marginalized. No child should be held back because they bleed. Yes, ideally, we would strive to convince the government to provide free menstrual products to all children in the UK. This is the first step towards that, unquote. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, It would be great if actually these companies would just provide the free menstrual products to the schools instead of having to have the government intervene. But the problem is they're interested in profits, right? And so instead of, you know, doing something that's humanitarian, they do a humanitarian part, but they only think that that humanitarian effort is necessary in developing countries. And they don't even think about the fact that the same problems that women have in developing countries are affecting women in London, in the United States, in all of Europe.
Yeah. And if you can actually still sign the petition, it's on change.org. And if you just Google hashtag free periods or go to freeperiod.com, I think it's com, it's not .org. It's going to be in the show notes, so just click on that. You can still sign that. I just find Amika George very inspiring and fascinating because she's an 18-year-old girl and she's just such a hero and such a an advocate for that subject. And I really admire that at the young age of 18 to be this. To use a very a horrible word, to be this woke at the young age of 18, that's really amazing. She also wrote an article for The Guardian with the title "The Shame of Period Poverty is Keeping British Girls Out of School. Let's Break the Silence." And in that, she mostly writes about a protest that took place in London as part of the campaign against period poverty. That will also be in the show notes, so you can read it up. And in the article, she talks about the fact that period poverty hit the public consciousness in December 2018 because of the film Daniel Blake, or it's called I, Daniel Blake, I think, because there's one scene in which a struggling single mother is caught stealing sanitary towels. And that was she says, a cultural moment. And then in March of the same year, there were those reports from schoolgirls in Leeds that routinely missed school because they were unable to afford menstrual products. And she says that there are families, even in the UK, for which menstrual products are an unattainable luxury.
Yeah, we think a lot about how mothers need diapers and how expensive diapers are for new mothers and that they can't afford that, especially if they are already below the poverty line. But, you know, menstrual products, because we don't like talking about them, because we don't like talking about the fact that people have periods, those kind of donations often fall by the wayside and they aren't made because people don't want to think about that. They are much happier thinking about babies and taking care of babies than they are thinking about taking care of women's vaginas.
Yeah. And it's also a connection that she draws in the article is the one between period shame and period poverty. Because she writes, quote, "It's silence that is preventing real progress from being made. The stigma and shame that shroud menstruation means girls are left to improvise alone every month, often without the knowledge of family members or friends. As we live in a world where periods are euphemized and belittled, and blue liquid is preferable to actual blood on TV adverts for sanitary towels," we talked about this in the last episode, "it's no surprise that they cannot and do not ask for help. We need to dispel this nonsensical taboo through conversation. By talking about our periods as freely and honestly as possible, we can teach girls as well as boys and men," which is also very important, "that they are a completely natural process, part of the reproductive cycle, and are absolutely nothing to be whispering about. We should all be shouting about the power of the period and celebrating our femininity." Again, what I find interesting here is that she clearly draws a connection between period shame and period poverty. And she says it's a vicious circle because the patriarchal mindset and culture that makes people ashamed of their periods also makes periods very, very expensive. Period shame has made it impossible to put the topic of menstruation on political agendas basically all over the world, and it makes it impossible to talk about why that is a problem.
Yeah, the shame that surrounds it, it just it makes it so that nobody wants to have a conversation about it. And if you can't have a conversation about it, then you can't get it in the public sphere. You can't get people talking about it, normalize it. It's a normal thing. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to have public discourse about tampons and periods and, you know, women's bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, men talk about women's bodies all the time when they talk about abortion. Why can't we talk about it with periods?
Yeah. Although I'm not sure whether the men that have strong opinions on abortion should also have opinions on periods in the public sphere. I'm not sure about that.
No, but they're more than happy to talk about it.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah. Yeah.
Both sides, you know, both sides of the aisle are more than happy to talk about abortion and about regulating women's bodies, but they're not interested in having a conversation about something that they can't regulate. I mean, and that's really the problem. They can't regulate menstruation, so.
That's true. That's true, actually. I have never thought about this. So you're putting out putting forward the hypothesis that one of the reasons men don't want to talk about periods is that it's an aspect of women's biology that they have no control over.
Exactly. It freaks them the fuck out because they have absolutely no control over it.
That's interesting. I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
Anyway. Quality content. We're putting out quality content. Okay. So there's another organization that I found on the interwebs that I really liked, and it's called Bloody Good Period, also bloodygoodperiod.com. And it's an organization that gives menstrual hygiene products to asylum seekers, refugees, and basically everyone who can afford them. And it's also based in the UK. And I know we have many listeners in the UK, so if you want to support the organization or donate money, you can do that also at bloodygoodperiod.com. And what they say about themselves is, and I'm quoting this again, quote, Bloody Good Period aims to create a sustainable flow, pun intended, of sanitary protection for those who cannot afford to buy them. Menstrual supplies are not cheap, but for anyone with a period, they are, of course, an absolute necessity. It is absurd that they are not free for those who need them. Many living in poverty resort to using toilet paper, old scraps of fabric, or nothing at all. We want to take the financial burden out of the most annoying time of the month, agreed, by providing supplies to those who need them. We supply 15 asylum seeker drops in centers. What?
We supply 15 asylum seeker drop-in centers based in London and Leeds.
Thank you. Our ambition is to supply many more food banks and drop-in centers across the UK so that bloody good periods can be had by all. So that's that organization. I really like that. And another organization who does a very similar thing is herperiod.com. So
.org.
Herperiod.org. You're right. So there are several organizations. Most that I found are within the UK, probably because in 2017 or at the end of 2016-2017 that was such the whole debate surrounding period poverty was so on the forefront of public consciousness. In Austria, I feel like we don't really talk about it that much, so I didn't really find any Austrian or German organizations. But go to the websites, look at what they do. It's really interesting. And in the Western world, the discussion surrounding period poverty is quite new. But in other parts of the world, the problem has been around for a long time. In India, Kenya, and Cambodia, they have battled for years to prevent girls from dropping out of school in communities where mattress stuffing and leaves are often used for menstrual management, says Amika George in the aforementioned article. Now, there are places like Scotland that take action against period poverty. For example, also in Kerala, which is a federal state in India, like a state of, like, as part of the nation, but it's like a state in India. It's like, how can I describe that?
I think we understand what states are.
Because you have them in the US too.
We have them in the United States. You have them in Austria. Germany has them. Yeah, everybody has them.
So it's like one state of the nation of India. Yes. There is a program called She Pads, and I'm quoting the chief minister of Kerala's Twitter account. He states, SheePath provides free sanitary napkins, napkin storage spaces, and incinerators in school.
Ooh.
Which is okay. SheePath scheme also aims to raise awareness about the need for menstrual hygiene and break the taboos around the subject. Menstrual hygiene is every girl's right. Government is hoping that initiatives like these will help our girls to lead a life of confidence. So that's cool. Like, I find also the incinerator thing is interesting.
Well, I mean, if they're cotton, then they can be burned. And it may be something that they often do. They often burn their trash there anyway. Some places do that as a, you know, mean they burn them, you know, to reduce the amount of garbage.
Yeah.
If they can be burned, then they burn them.
Yeah. And then in the, also another good example is the state of New York, because in the state of New York, there's no tampon tax anymore, like at all. In July 2016, New York State exempted feminine hygiene products from taxation. And they also provide free tampons in schools, homeless shelters, and prisons, which I found really interesting because apparently prisons up to this point were places where you couldn't get like menstrual hygiene products very easily.
Yes. So if you've ever watched, if any of our listeners have watched the show Orange is the New Black, obviously it's a fictional account, a fictionalized account of a prison. But one of the things is they have to buy the tampons themselves from the money that they earn while being in the prison. And so they have to purchase them. They become, if they want to buy tampons, they could use, I think that they get pads, but if they want to use tampons, I don't recall exactly, but it was very expensive for the prison. And so the prison started to implement menstrual cups because it was supposed to be a cost saving measure.
Yeah.
But that was not popular.
Yeah. But since 2016, July 2016, in New York State, there's no taxation on menstrual hygiene products, and there are free tampons in schools, homeless shelters, and prisons, which is really cool. And really necessary.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about the situation of taxation of tampons a little bit later in the United States, at least.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, to kind of name it as like one of the good examples of states or countries fighting period poverty effectively.
Sure. So this isn't just in the UK.
Obviously.
The problem that we have with women in poverty not having access to sanitary products, or people in poverty not having access to sanitary products. In her book on menstruation entitled Periods Gone Public, Taking a Stand for Menstrual Equity, Jennifer Weiss-Wolf points out that, quote, roughly 42 million women live in or close to poverty, according to 2014 statistics, yet most American programs designed to help low-income families, including Medicaid, SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps, and WIC, which is a Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program for Women, Infants, and Children. All of these programs exclude menstrual products, even though the FDA considers them, quote, medical products. SNAP and WIC classify pads and tampons alongside luxuries like pet food, cigarettes, and alcohol. Why is this so important? Reusing products or using tampons and pads for too long or not using them at all leads to a higher rate of infection and other conditions for which patients are likely to require medical intervention, Weiss-Wolf writes in her book. Quote, arguments about the physical effects could be further reinforced by showing if or how lack of menstrual products causes psychological stress. The fact that periods involve bodily fluids and bloodborne pathogens certainly create additional implications for public health, hygiene, and sanitation. So, you know, not providing hygiene products for people who menstruate could be a potential public health issue, in addition to being just fucked up. So, moreover, a study conducted by Dr. Marnie Summer, associate professor at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health, found that low-income teenage girls, and this is specifically in the United States, that low-income teenage girls felt embarrassment surrounding their first period and had a desire to know more about the process of menstruation. Much of the battle to end period stigma will rely on the next generation, and there's no better place than to begin in schools. Weiss-Wolf advocates for an open conversation about menstruation along with other hygiene basics and health education. Think about hand washing after using the bathroom. You know, we talk about that all the time. And freely discussing the natural biological functions in a, quote, respectful and positive way, keeping tampons and pads in classrooms, and even using puberty-themed comics and coloring books and incorporating menstruation in the curriculum, in literature, history, etc., will help reduce the stigma. So think about, instead of having boys and girls separated when we talk about menstruation, having everyone together and talk about the history of menstrual products, and and having boys and girls talk about it together, so that guys can realize, young men can realize that this is something, this is a problem that has been going on for a long time.
Yeah. I already stated before that I think menstrual hygiene products, just like contraception, should be available for free. But certainly we are very, very far away from that in most countries of the world, because on top of being very expensive, as we talked about, they are also taxed unfairly and very, very high in many places, like luxury products oftentimes. And that's one of the problems with non-menstruating men being in power, making the rules. I'm talking about the tampon tax, the so-called tampon tax. Now, what is the tampon tax? It's kind of a colloquial term that is used to call attention to the fact that tampons and, of course, other menstrual hygiene products that are, as Wikipedia puts it, used to manage menstrual flow, are subject to value-added tax at odds with the tax exemption status that's granted to other products that are considered basic necessities. And as you might have guessed, as we're proponents of tax exemption. And like so many others, we also think that tampons, sanitary pads, menstrual cups, and comparable products constitute basic unavoidable necessities for women and other people who menstruate, and thus should be made tax exempt, at least. So, like many other feminists, we also think that feminine hygiene products or menstrual hygiene products serve the basic menstrual cycle, and they should be classified alongside other unavoidable tax-exempt necessities such as groceries or personal medical items. And there are... If there's one thing in the world that I don't want to think about and don't understand, it's taxation systems. But obviously there are a lot of different systems around the world. So I think we should probably talk about Austria and the US at the moment, because that's what we know, what we're familiar with.
Sure.
Given the fact that both the US and Austria have a very, let's say, conservative government at the moment, we probably won't see free menstrual hygiene products anytime soon. But I think one thing that anyone who listens to this can do is ask yourself whether your workplace provides free menstrual hygiene products. You probably get free toilet paper there. Why don't you get pads and tampons, right? And then maybe ask your boss whether he or she can make that happen. And if you are the boss, provide your employees with free menstrual hygiene products, just like you provide them with toilet paper, or if it's an office, with probably you provide them with free coffee. Why not with free menstrual hygiene products? And I think another thing that you can also do is write letters and emails to the people responsible to provide girls in schools with free tampons and pads.
Yeah, you know, I think if when I was in high school and junior high school, I want to say if you went to the nurse's office, you could probably get a tampon or a pad. But and we had machines in the women's bathrooms, but we did not, they were not free. They were like a quarter. But I think if you went to the nurse's office, you could probably get a pad. But you had to go to the nurse's office. It wasn't like they were just there available.
Which is an additional like barrier, because
shame.
If your period is already something that you feel ashamed for, then you don't go to someone and say, I'm on my period. I need something to manage my menstrual flow. You know, I mean, So the reason why I wrote the aforementioned article for Sugarbox last year is that there was a petition in Austria that was started by Erdbewoche, the social business we talked about last time, that wanted to reduce the taxes on menstrual hygiene products. Because the situation in Austria is this. Consumer goods are taxed with a value-added tax of 10%. Menstrual hygiene products are taxed with a VAD of 20%, which means that the tax... Which means that the tax rate on menstrual hygiene products is as high as the one on champagne, higher as for caviar or cinema tickets or flowers, which is completely ridiculous. Flowers, cinema tickets, and caviar are not necessities. Tampons, pads, and menstrual cups are. We don't buy those for fun. And also, just as a side note, in Germany, the situation isn't any better. The VAT on menstrual products is 19%, which is the so-called Luxussteuer. So it's like the increased tax rate for luxury items. items that the state regards, or that the country regards as daily necessities, such as chocolate, coffee or flowers, are only taxed with 7%. And again, just shows us how important it is that we have female leaders or leaders that...
But wait a minute. Germany's had a female chancellor for fucking ever.
That is true. But, you know, it doesn't make German society any less of a patriarchy. Yes, of course, there's one woman who is the leader of this country. But then again, she's also a representative of a very conservative party. And...
Sure.
Within the party, it's mostly men who make the decision. So I'm not saying that it's not good that there's a woman in charge in Germany. I'm saying that we need much more than that, you know? Because only people who do not menstruate come up with this kind of bullshit, right? And that's not men being evil or people who don't menstruate being evil. This is male leaders not even thinking about people who menstruate.
Oh, just wait for it. Wait till I describe California.
Because it's not on their radar. Describe California. Go ahead, Liz.
Okay. So
what's the situation in the U.S. like?
So in the U.S., there are a handful of states that don't have any state sales tax. So we do not have a federal sales tax in the United States. We have each individual state sets their own state sales tax.
Yeah.
So there are a handful of states that don't have sales tax at all. Those are Oregon, Montana, Alaska, New Hampshire, and Delaware. Mm-hmm. Of the states that do have taxes on products, so they do have state sales taxes, only a few have chosen not to tax feminine hygiene products. And that Minnesota, Illinois, Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Florida. But a handful of those states have just made the change in the last 2 years since this has been raised as an issue in the states. And that's Illinois, New York, Connecticut, and Florida. So those are all new states that don't tax feminine hygiene or menstrual hygiene products. So California. I'm originally from California, yeah. So this was a particular interest to me. According to a Washington Post article from 2016, Californian women pay about $7 a month for 40 years on tampons and sanitary napkins. Statewide, this adds up to over $20 million annually in taxes. Think about that. $20 million paid only by women in taxes over 40 years. So State Assemblywoman Christina Garcia is trying to pass legislation to remove the tampon tax as a gender equity issue, arguing that tampons are not a luxury, but a necessity. And she and her fellow assembly people in California tried to increase the taxes on alcohol, hard alcohol, not beer and wine, so like vodka, whiskey, etc., to offset the revenue from lost taxes. Because everybody drinks alcohol, only people who have periods use menstrual hygiene products.
Yeah.
So to recoup those loss of taxes. So taxes, it was all about money. Even though the bill to eliminate the tampon tax was passed with support from both parties in California, the governor vetoed the bill citing fiscal concerns. So he was very concerned that he was going to be losing. And this is a liberal governor was concerned that he was going to be losing too much money by eliminating the tampon tax. So in the statement, the governor argued, quote, each of these bills creates a new tax break or expands an existing tax break. The governor also vetoed similar bills, including one to end a tax on baby diapers, arguing that it would reduce state revenue by $300 million in the coming year. They don't actually care about people. They only care about money.
Yeah, particularly not about people with vaginas.
Well, yeah, or baby. I mean, like, okay, so, like, people with vagina, like, not necessarily people with vaginas. People who are caring for children, who have to pay for children's diapers. Like, screw you, pay the tax. Like, this is a tax that affects both men and women. Well, no, it affects babies, and it's a necessity for babies. Yeah. Like, come on. Come on. that, and this is why we have diaper banks in places like California, where people can go to get free diapers for their children that somebody else pays the tax on them, so that they can be given to for free to people who need diapers for their babies. That's California.
I couldn't hear you for a second, so I don't know what you talked about.
Oh, sorry. I was ranting about diapers.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
So in addition to, you know, the issue with taxes, as Beatrice mentioned, like, we should really be thinking about how we can provide free menstrual hygiene products in schools and in public restrooms. So the website freethetampon.org does a great job explaining why there is a need for to have freely accessible tampons and pads in all public restrooms. Typically in the US, if a restroom actually has a tampon or pad dispenser, it's 25 cents for a tampon or a pad. But half the time the machines don't actually work, or they're not filled, or you don't have a quarter. Also, we need to talk about creating a safe environment in bathrooms for trans and genderqueer individuals. If we provide free menstrual products in all bathrooms, men's, women's, gender neutral, and marketed menstrual products to all genders, then perhaps we wouldn't have as much of a taboo around the notion of periods and hygiene products. So all public restrooms, men's, women's, whatever, need to have tampons and pads available, preferably for free. I think that, you know, you can't mandate that. You can mandate that in public, you know, in public spaces. So like the government could provide those types of things. But if you have a company who you think should be offering this, petition the company to tell them that you think it's important for them to offer these products for free in their bathrooms.
Yeah. And if you, you know, are in the UK, go to the pages of the organizations that I talked about, the Free Period Campaign and the Bloody Good Period Campaign. And support them. You know, they always need donations, and so do that. And then also, of course, I think when it comes to periods, one of the most important things that we can do is talk about it.
Yes, agreed.
Because normalizing periods is a huge step in the direction of also talking about period poverty and solving that issue. So
yeah, and I think regardless of what your politics are, I think that we can agree that, you know, a tax on something that is a necessity for one half of the population and not a necessity for the other is a regressive tax that's affecting people who already don't make as much money and already are, you know, are in a disadvantaged position. If you can't agree that, like, adult women should be able to have free menstrual products, then you at least should be able to get on board with the idea that school-age children who have been ashamed of their periods and are missing school, something that is a public good that we have decided as a society is something that we want to provide for students. If we want all girls to feel comfortable going to school, then this is something that we should be thinking about and be supporting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the things that you can do is you can write to schools and governments and tell them that you want free menstrual products to happen, or at least tax exemptions. You can tell your employer to provide their employees with free menstrual products, or if you are an employer, you can do that yourself. And you can talk about periods to normalize them. I think that's the three things we can do.
And if you want to get together with other people in your community to donate menstrual products for free to local schools and youth organizations, that might be a great first step if to be acting locally within your own community.
Yeah. And also like asylum centers and all of that. So, Okay. So last time we talked about the whole period positivity movement. And I said that there are so many campaigns and Instagram accounts now that are like happening under the umbrella term of period positivity. And I actually wanted to give you a few more shout outs and recommendations on things that you can listen to, look at, or watch. I already did that last time with, I think, three or four organizations, and I'm going to do it now again. So one thing that I can only recommend is that you go and listen to the podcast, I've Got My Period. It's available on SoundCloud, but it's also it also has a Facebook page, and it's basically about it's a podcast that kind of starts a conversation about the subject of periods, but also tries to find a music like expression for it in musical form, which is interesting. Then there is an Instagram account that I like, which is called menstruation.period, and it has pics of period blood, and it's kind of mission is also to normalize a bodily fluid that is often deemed disgusting and abject. Then one thing that I really liked is menstruationmuseum.com, and it's an actual museum collection in Amsterdam that is dedicated to the topic of menstruation, which is one more reason to visit Amsterdam, wink wink, because I heard they also have substances to relieve period pain effectively available there legally. And now they also have a menstruation museum. And then what I also like is the blog dearperiod.com, and it's also an Instagram account. You can also find it on Instagram, dearperiod. And it's basically people writing letters to their menstruation, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth one is a Menstrugram, which is also an Instagram account. And it's an Instagram account where people... yeah, it's kind of a collection of photos, and you can also send your own there. And it's photos of menstrual blood, mostly in toilets, which is also, of course, an attempt to normalize the subject. So there you go. Those are my five recommendations today. The podcast I've Got My Period, the Instagram page menstruation.period, the Instagram page Menstrugram, menstruationmuseum.com, and dearperiod.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, what are our lessons learned? I would say menstrual hygiene products are not a luxury.
They are not a luxury. They're an absolute necessity. And women or people who menstruate have the right to not be held back by the fact that they menstruate. I think that's my lesson learned. And my lesson learned is also that it's important that we have diverse leaders, and that also includes people who menstruate, because half of the population menstruate and they are not sufficiently represented in political offices around the world. And one of the problems that is created, there are many problems stem from that, but one of the problems that also stems from the fact that women and people who menstruate are not sufficiently represented in political offices is that we have shitty stuff like tampon taxes and period poverty to deal with.
Agreed.
So
you want to help take care of tampon taxes and period poverty in your community, get active.
Mm-hmm. You'll find resources and sources and web pages that help you get active in the show notes to this episode that you can find on our homepage, shewhopersisted.com, where you can also listen to all of our episodes, and you can find all of our show notes, because we always have a lot of interesting links in our show notes on our webpage. We always put all of our sources there. There are interesting organizations that we'll link to, other podcasts that we'll link to. So go and look at that. Then also you can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, but we also have the Persisters Facebook group that I already mentioned in the beginning of the episode, that is really a useful tool for us to get in contact with you and for you to get in contact with us, and also to discuss all of those issues that we talk about in our episodes with other listeners and with us. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter. She Persisted Pod is our at Twitter. And then you can write us an email, shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Patreon if you want to support us, patreon.com/shewhopersisted. And yeah, that's it, I think. Also, if you speak German, then go and listen to my other podcast, which is called Große Töchter. It's also available everywhere you listen to podcasts. You can listen to podcasts. And yeah, She Who Persisted, You can listen to us on our homepage, upsister.com, where you can also find, as I said, all kinds of other interesting links and info. You can listen to us on Blog Talk Radio, on Stitcher, on Apple iTunes, on your favorite podcatcher app, wherever you want to listen to us. You can listen to us except Spotify, because they still...
they hate feminism.
They just don't like us. I don't know. But everywhere else you can listen to us, and I think that's it. Anything else that we have to say?
I don't think so. Oh, Player FM has us as one of the best feminist podcasts. So yay us.
Yeah, we've been on that list for a few times already, but I checked it again a few days ago and we're on there again, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Player FM.
Yeah. And thank you all for listening.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and stay nasty.
Stay nasty. Bye.